This is the B-side of the lecture, Micah and Modern Times. We've been seeing that Micah in chapter 6 is giving us information here about the future, but he tells us to understand it, and his prophecies that he was giving back there in the 8th century B.C. is to go back to an earlier time and to catch the prophecies that were given in the period of Moses. In fact, he singles out here the very prophecies of Balaam, and he says this: if you want to know what I am talking about, then you'd better go back there to that time. Now, remember that Micah, in the former chapters that we've been talking about here, was censuring Israel against idolatry, and how they were allowing the nations and their theological opinions, that is, the Gentile nations, to influence and to thwart what God had been giving to ancient Israel in the past. Micah was upset, and he was trying to get the people of northern Israel in Samaria and also those in Judea, with the capital at Jerusalem, to see the evil of their ways and to change. He said, if you want to know when this prophecy is going to take place that I am giving here, then you're going to have to look at the prophecies of Balaam. Now, the whole incident of Balaam and Barak was the king of Moab, and Balaam was sought from the area of Mesopotamia. You'll have to go back to Numbers chapter 22. Let's do that. In actual fact, Numbers 22, 23, 24, and 25 is a corollary chapter to the whole thing, because it shows, as I will show in a few moments here, a consequence of the prophecies of Balaam and how it helps to understand what even the Apostle Paul had to say to the people back in the first century, and also what Micah had to say to the Israelites in the 7th century B.C. And it also has to do with us today. That is the important thing for you and I to understand. Remember, the title of this lecture is Micah and Modern Times. It has to do with the last days. It has to do when the earth is going to witness very soon the coming of the Lord, where the mountains will melt under his feet. That means a personal presence. And of course, we know in the New Testament period that means the presence of Christ Jesus in the name of and in the personality, with the personality of Yahweh dominating his characteristics. If you go to Numbers chapter 22, then you'll find this story of how Barak, who was the king of Moab on the other side of Jordan, hired Balaam, who was from Pethor. That means from Peter. That means St. Peter's up in Mesopotamia in this case. Balaam has been compared to the Pontifex Maximus of the entire world. That is the reason that Barak called for him. Barak had priests of his own. They had a god that they worshipped called Milcom, and also Chemosh, and others like that. Even Solomon took up, because of his wives and concubines, some of those doctrines at a later time, much to his regret later on. But on the other hand, we find that these Eastern peoples, who were descendants of Shem, they also were people who came from Lot, and they were people who were close in kin to the ancient Israelites. But they also knew that if they wanted to have God, the God of heaven and earth, to curse someone, they had to call or go through special authority, the people here on earth. You might say that Balaam was like a pope, like a chief pontifex, Maximus, on the earth. And that is the reason why Barak called on him. And he was willing to come. But he did tell him this. He said in this chapter 22 here, he said, now, Balaam said this to him. You can read the whole thing, but he says, I cannot do anything unless Yahweh himself, who is the God of Israel, and the God that I am worshiping, I cannot do anything unless he tells me to do it. Now, Barak agreed with that. However, he wanted Balaam to curse Israel, because they were looking down from the mountain heights, down over the Jordan Valley toward the west, toward the mountains later on in what they called Judea, and where Jerusalem later on was. And they could see the vast extent of Israel down there. And they happened to know by the Exodus that they had come through the Red Sea in a great miraculous manner, and how the Amalekites had been destroyed in a miraculous manner, and how the Israelites had, without even food or water, had been supplied in the wilderness for 40 years. They understood these miracles, so they knew that the God of Israel, Yahweh, was a powerful God. In fact, many of them identified him with the God of gods. And so they called on Balaam, and Balaam himself said, I will prophesy in the name of Yahweh, and I will say what I have to say. Now, Barak said to him, I want you to curse them. I don't want you to bless them. I want you to curse them. Well, we find the incident here that Balaam said he couldn't do it, and so he began to leave. And he, on the way, well, God told him to leave, and they had a conversation. God was upset with him on one point, one thing that he did not do, and so the Balaam's ass incident comes into it. That's in the 22nd chapter, and you will remember that. But finally, Balaam decides, okay, I'll do what God tells me to do, and he went back to Barak. And then a series of four prophecies are given. Now, the interesting thing is that Barak wanted him to curse Israel, and on four different occasions, once sacrifices were offered at an altar and all of that and so forth and so on, in every single case, we find that Balaam blessed Israel, much to Barak's chagrin. He did not want that to happen. But we find that that is the occasion where Balaam had nothing else to do. He had to go and perform what his role of a prophet was, and he had no alternative. He told Barak what the deal was, and Barak was upset with him, but that's the way it was. These four prophecies are given in chapter 23 and 24. The interesting thing about it is this. In verse 14, you get a time period for these prophecies to take place that Balaam was talking about. They were not to occur immediately, and some of them were very grand prophecies, as a matter of fact, having world-shaking consequences. But here in chapter 24 and verse 14, it says, "And now, behold, I go unto my people," says Balaam. "Come, therefore, and I will advertise you what this people shall do to your people, Barak," that is Moab, "in the latter days." You see, in the latter days. Now, in verse 15 of chapter 24, he takes up this parable, and he says, it says here, "Balaam the son of Beor hath said, and the man whose eyes are open hath said, and he said, which heard the words of God, and knew the knowledge of the Most High, which saw the vision of the Almighty, he was falling into a trance, but having his eyes open." Now this is Balaam, and here's what he saw, and this is what he said. "I shall see him," that is Israel, "is going to smite Moab in the future. But not now, not now, not at this time. For I behold him, and not nigh," it's not immediate. He says it's the latter days. Now what's going to happen? "There shall come a star out of Jacob, a scepter, a ruling rod shall rise out of Israel, and shall smite the corners of Moab, and destroy all the children of Sheth," that has to do with the Moabites. "And Edom shall be a possession to Israel. Seir," which was the nation or the area of Edom, "shall also be a possession for his enemies, and Israel shall do valiantly." Now, you can see that Barak was not very pleased with this. "But a star shall come out of Israel," that's the Messiah, "who at a later time," not now, not nigh, he says, "but in the latter days." Now, this is what Micah was referring to. He was saying, you go back and read what Balaam said, and you're going to see what's going to happen to all the nations round about here, and it's going to stretch out also to Assyria. Now, that's what Micah was saying, because the next prophecy goes on with this. It says, "Out of Jacob shall come he," verse 19, "that shall have dominion." That's the Messiah. "And he shall destroy him that remains of the city of Edom." You have to go to the book of Obadiah to understand what city that is. Has to do, all of these minor prophets are tied together, and they're tied together here with this prophecy of Balaam. Verse 20, "And when he looked on Amalek, he took up his parable," that is Balaam did, "against the Amalekites. And he said, though Amalek was the first of the nations," that's the first to do war against Israel down there near Mount Sinai, "his latter end shall be, he will perish forever." Now, the Amalekites had a lot of things to do with Israel later on. They almost destroyed them in the time of Esther, I should say. You remember the book of Esther? But at a later time, at the end of the age, the Amalekites are going to be done away with. That doesn't end it, though. Verse 21, "He looked upon the Kenites." That was a tribe, a Shemitic tribe nearby. "He took up this parable and said, strong is your dwelling place, and you shall put your nest in a rock. Nevertheless, the Kenite shall be wasted until Asher," the Assyrians, "shall take you away captive." Now, this is at the end time as well. These short, terse, Very small prophecies, but these are the prophecies of Balaam to do with the very end time of world-shaking consequences, and Micah is telling the Israelites to pay attention to them because his prophecy is absolutely based upon these. That doesn't end it. Verse 23, he, Balaam, took up his parable and said, alas, or woe, who shall live when God does these things or establishes Israel? Well, I'll tell you this, that was a question he put out. You and I are coming closer to that time every day. And I'll tell you, we don't have very long to wait to see these very things starting to take place. He says, who is going to live at that time? And here is verse 24 and 25. That ends the prophecies of Balaam. These last two verses have world-shaking consequences to them. Listen to what it says. And the ship shall come from the coast of Kittim. Kittim means Europe, southern Europe, the Europeans, and shall afflict Asher, the Assyrians, in the east, the eastern peoples, and shall afflict Eber, that's the Hebrews in the middle, Hebrews, Israel, who will be in the middle at that time. And he, that means in this case the Kittim or the Assyrians, shall perish forever. And Balaam rose up, went and returned to his place, and Balak also went his way, and that's the end of it. At the very end, we're going to find that Assyria shall be destroyed. And who's going to come out the winner? Well, it's going to be the people of Eber, the Hebrews, who are going to have a person who is going to be the star that comes out of Jacob, who shall have dominion. He's going to put down the Amalekites, the Kenites, the Moabites, the Ammonites, the Assyrians, and those of Kittim, and a major war at the end of the age is going to take place. This is the prophecy that we find Micah saying you should read so that his prophecy, given in the last part of the 8th century, can be understood. But his prophecy itself had to do with the end time. Now, what follows on immediately after these prophecies of Balaam? Chapter 25, in the plains of Shittim, in the plains of Jordan, we find that the Israelites here, immediately after these prophecies, go into the Midianites and the women and commit adultery with them, whereas 24,000 of them are killed as a result of it, because they went into an idolatrous relationship immediately here with these Midianites. And of course, Moses was upset, God was upset, Joshua was upset, but 24,000 Israelites were killed right on the heels of these mighty prophecies about how they were going to be the top nation on the earth, and here they are immediately going into idolatry. Now, Micah said, go back to Balaam's prophecies and to see the consequences to understand mine. He is talking about Israel and Judah at the end of the age, at a time when God is about ready to come to this earth, when idolatry is going to be rampant, he says, on the earth, and where idolatry is going to be in Israel and so forth. And you know, now let's go on a little bit farther, because you know, let's go into the New Testament. To understand Micah, you're going to go to the New Testament. If you'll go to 1 Corinthians chapter 10, look at these events mentioned by the Apostle Paul, our apostle, under inspiration of God. He connected them together in a cyclical sense, dealing with the end of the age, using them even as a type for his own period, Paul did, but reaching out to our period at the end of the age, the very one that Balaam was talking about, the very one that Micah was talking about. Look at chapter 10 of the book of Corinthians. Moreover, brethren, he said to the Corinthian Gentiles, I would not that you should be ignorant how that all our fathers were under a cloud, all passed through the Red Sea, you know, the sea. Now, this is the Exodus. They were baptized unto Moses. They did eat the same spiritual drink, that spiritual rock that followed them, which was Christ. He goes on to say that. But with many of them, God was not well pleased, for they were overthrown in the wilderness, in that 25th chapter of the book of Numbers. Right after Balaam's prophecies, they went immediately into idolatry, which is most amazing. It goes on to say, now these things were our examples, Paul says. Even for those in the first century, that's true. But it's not only for them. You're going to wait and see something here in a moment. It's going to reach out and also be an example for those who live at the end of the age. This is what Paul said. He understood these prophecies. Now, these things were our examples to the extent that we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted. not only after physical fornication, but fornication with the idolatry of this world, which many people had the gall to say was Yahweh teachings and things of that nature. He says, neither be you idolaters. This is the Apostle Paul speaking. And he is just following Micah, and he's following the Balaam prophecies absolutely. Neither be you idolaters, as some of them were. As it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Neither let us commit fornication, as some of them committed, and fell in one day 23,000 people. Back there in Numbers 25, it says 24,000. That's up finally 24, but on the first day, 23,000 of them, all killed because of going into idolatry. Verse 9, chapter 10 of 1 Corinthians, verse 9, neither let us tempt Christ, as some of them also tempted and were destroyed of serpents. Neither murmur you, as some of them murmured and were destroyed by the destroyer, the death angel. Now, all these things happened. Now, here it is, verse 11. All these things happened unto them for examples, and they are written for our admonition, but notice this, upon whom the ends of the world or the aeons are come. In other words, for Christians too, reaching out to the very end of the age. That is the age that you and I are in at this present time. We are coming into the period when Micah was talking about the latter days. We are coming into the period when Balaam was talking about Israel in the latter days, when a star is going to come out of Jacob, when a Messiah is going to come, when idolatry is going to be put down, and that is the very thing that is going to occur, when idolatry is put down. The Apostle Paul went on to say to these Corinthians, who were Gentiles, and they had the Holy Spirit, but at the same time they were absorbing many of the teachings of the other Gentiles around them and bringing into the teachings of Christianity, and the Apostle Paul had to straighten them out. And you know what we have done at the end of the age? That's exactly what we have done over the period of the last 2,000 or 1,900 years since Paul wrote this. We have absorbed, in most cases, the very things that he is saying that the Corinthians should not do, and the very things that we find Micah saying not to be done, and the very things that Balaam was prophesying against. Now, look at this here. He goes on to say, this is the Apostle Paul, and you wonder what this has to do with Micah? Everything in the world. Because we're putting the whole thing into an end-time context. That's what Micah is saying to do, and that is what the Apostle Paul is doing. He goes to say, there is no temptation or trial taken you that is not common to man, that is such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted above what you are able, but will with the test or the temptation also make a way of escape, that you may be able to bear it. Wherefore, my beloved brethren, or my dearly beloved, flee from idolatry. Now that is what the Apostle Paul said. The whole theme is flee from idolatry. He then has to go on to say that the Corinthians were mixed up in idolatrous practices. Some things that were done in Corinth were perfectly all right, he said, but other things were not all right. Some of them were actually mixing in pagan rites with what some people call the Lord's Supper. And they were doing this, they were doing that, they were doing all types of customs that in many cases were nothing more than idolatry. And he said the same thing happened after Balaam gave his prophecies and teachings and all of that with the ancient Israelites. And what are these examples for? They are for all of us and those who live at the closing of the aeons. It means for you and me today. So idolatry was a central theme even of the Apostle Paul's teaching. That is, do not commit idolatry. Now, idolatry is in many ways the most tenacious doctrine that people hold on to more than any other. Because idolatry involves the things that we do in our everyday lives and our throughout the year. How many of you just love Christmas? Christmas is a fine, beautiful time to have a good time, isn't it? According to most people. You know, it's nothing more than the celebration of a pagan sun god worship. I'm just telling you that. Go ahead and keep it if you wish to. That's up to you. But the point is, the Apostle Paul says, flee idolatry. We find the book of John telling us, little children, leave idolatry. Idolatry is absolutely all over the place in our modern generation, and it was in the past, and it will be at the end of the age. And we find here the Apostle Paul then connecting together these events of the past that Micah said you ought to look at if you're going to understand his prophecies. Now let's go to Micah once more, and what you find here is some very interesting things. Micah chapter 2, We're going to find that at the end of the age, once Israel has been dealt with and learns its lesson, it does say in the book of Zechariah that there's going to be a great mourning in Israel, in Judea, in Jerusalem. And there, at the very end of the age, they're going to learn to give up idolatry and to get idolatry out of the system. That is the central key. Now, not everyone is going to do it right at first. It's going to really get it out. It's going to require the destruction of Jerusalem once more. And we find that in the 14th chapter of the book of Zechariah. We also find it in Micah here, chapter 3 and verse 12. And we find it in other places of the scripture. But here is what will finally come to pass with Israel. And it's a glorious thing. It's just like Balaam said. When Balaam got up, who was the Pontifex Maximus of the ancient world, and tried to bring curses finally upon Israel, even though they deserved them, he could not give any curses whatever. And this is what Micah was finally trying to encourage the Israelites to understand. But to come to their blessings, to come to a period of time when God is going to bless them and bless them abundantly, meant to flee idolatry back at that time. And not go into it immediately, like they did in Numbers chapter 25, right on the heels of Balaam's prophecies. And as they were doing in the time of Isaiah, and as they were doing in the time of Micah, and as they were doing in many cases in the time of the Apostle Paul. There's coming a period, however, at the end of the age when Israel is going to learn its lesson, and that lesson is going to be learned not only in Israel, but it's going to ramify throughout the entire world, and the whole world finally will begin to realize that idolatry is not the way to understand God. In fact, it's the way to not understand Him. We've got to get rid of this idolatrous society and the principles of idolatry that penetrate the very fabric of our civilization. That is what we find the prophets talking about the most. That is what we find, in a prophetic sense, even the Apostle Paul and John and others centering their teachings on. So let's look and see in Micah chapter 2 here and verse 12 what is going to happen finally. I will surely assemble, O Jacob, all of you. I will surely gather the remnant of Israel. I will put them together as the sheep of Bozrah. That's on the other side of Jordan. As the flock in the midst of their fold, they shall make great noise by reason of the multitude of men. The breaker is come up before them. They have broken up and passed through the gate, and they are gone out by it, and their kings shall pass before them, and the Lord on or as the head of them. Notice this. God is coming in person to lead them out of captivity, to break the gates that keep them in, hemmed in in the world. He's going to be called the great Messiah or the breaker. He's also going to break the idols in other places, and he's going to lead them. He's going to be the great king. And then going on in chapter 5 and verse 2, here's what we read, interspersing into this. Who is this great king? Or, as Balaam said, the star that shall come forth out of Jacob. Here is what Micah said in chapter 5 and verse 2. But thou, Bethlehem Ephratah, though you be little among the thousands of Judah, yet out of you shall he come forth unto me to be ruler of Israel. Who is this that's being talked of? We know from the New Testament who was born in Bethlehem Ephratah. It is Jesus the Christ. He is the breaker. He is the one to come. He is the one to set his feet upon the surface of this earth. He is the one to lead Israel into righteousness. And it goes on to say that he is going to be the ruler in Israel. That is chapter 5, verse 2. Whose going forth have been from of old, from everlasting, as it says in the King James. That means from ancient times, long before Abraham was ever here on earth. Remember what Jesus said when they said to him, "Why, you're not 50 years of age yet." He said, "Before Abraham was, I am." And by saying "I am," that identified him with Yahweh, the one who was, the one who is, the one who will be, the one who is continually present the I Am. And who is this I Am? He's going to come out of Bethlehem. You see the New Testament relevance to all of this? Paul and John and Peter and the rest of them saw all of these things. Here is Micah connecting his prophecies with Balaam's prophecies. Balaam's prophecies at the time of the Exodus have a latter-day significance, when the whole world is going to be in a conflagration between the people of Kittim in the West, which would include the United States of America, because we are an appendage of Europe, with the Shemitic tribes in the East, Asher, and Heber in the middle, that is the Hebrews, that Israel, they're going to be in the Middle East again. These prophecies, though they are terse, they are very short, yet they link up with what Micah says in 7 chapters and what Isaiah says in 66. And what the book of Daniel says in 12, with a skeleton form. What the book of Revelation says in 22. Put them all together and you have a prophetic scenario here of teachings of how Jesus Christ is going to come to save Jacob, to save Israel, but not only Israel, to save the whole world from their idolatry into a relationship with God, in which righteousness and judgment and proper living will be in existence. And at that time, prosperity will break out on the earth. That's why he says in chapter 4 and verse 1, in the last days it shall come to pass that the mountain of the house of the Lord shall be established in the top of the mountains. It shall be exalted above the hills, and people shall flow into it. And when this person out of Bethlehem comes along, called the Breaker, or as Balaam says, the star that shall come out of Jacob, when that personage comes to rule and with dominion, or with the scepter on his side, many nations shall come and say, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob. He will teach us his ways. We will walk in his paths. For the law shall go forth of Zion, and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. This concludes the B-side of the lecture, Micah and Modern Times.